All right, guys, you were locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is the in-depth scouting report of the Falcons' sixth-round wide receiver, Russell Gage, out of Louisiana State University.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of Falcons.com on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course the host of this Locked On Falcons podcast. Today is our scouting report of Russell Gage. We've done these weekly scouting reports of all so far. This will be the fifth one, but we're going to do, you know, all six of the Falcons 2018 draft picks, ending and wrapping up with Foye Olukun on next week's show. If you are curious about the previous episodes involving Calvin Ridley, Isaiah Oliver, Deejon Snott, and Ito Smith, you can, of course, check those out on LockedOnFalcons.com or FalcFans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. So today we're going to talk about Russell Gage. We're going to talk about his strengths, his weaknesses, sort of where I see his fit in Atlanta, potentially as a wide receiver, potentially as a cornerback, also his value on special teams. And to kick things off a little bit, we'll give a little bit of background information on Russell Gage's stint in his development, which I think is always a part of the evaluation process. So you always got to take those things into account because it does sort of can help you, let's say, clue you into sort of where a player's development can potentially be, because not every player is at the same level when they leave college, as often a lot of people like to pretend. So looking at Russell Gage's time at LSU, even before he was at LSU, he was a dual threat quarterback in college, in high school, also played some defensive back in high school, went to LSU with the expectation that he'd become a quality cornerback. Several guys, from what I understand, LSU has produced several NFL quality starters in the league that were high school quarterbacks that became cornerbacks at LSU and then went on to moderate degrees of success in the league, Mo Claiborne, Corey Webster being two examples of that. So that was the expectation for Russell Gage when he showed up at LSU in Baton Rouge. He sort of rode the bench for 2 years as a backup defensive back, didn't really see much time outside of special teams, then made the move to wide receiver as a junior, saw some action, as a senior, was essentially their number three receiver, but basically I think finished on second on the team in both receptions and yards as a wide receiver, in part due to the injury, I think it was, to their number two receiver, who was like this 6'6" guy or whatever the case may be. I know that guy was limited. I don't remember if it was injuries or something else that prevented him from playing. And so you sort of now have Russell Gage entering the league as a wide receiver, but also has at least some potential to play defensive back. And we'll circle back to the defensive back thing, but I do want to talk about his ability to translate as a wide receiver. And I'm not overly optimistic about his chances of succeeding as a wide receiver. I think he's a pretty middling prospect in that regard. I don't think he's sort of, like, basically, I don't think the Falcons drafted him because of his upside as a wide receiver. Like, I think if you were grading him purely as a wide receiver, he would be on par with a low-level undrafted player. Like, I think there are undrafted free agents that the Falcons pick up that are better wide receiver prospects than Russell Gage is. And the big reason why I think that is you look at his route running, which I think is fairly rudimentary and suspect, which you can owe a lot to his lack of experience with only 2 years of playing that position. I don't think he's particularly balanced or smooth with his footwork, and I think it's pretty raw. I think he has good speed, not amazing speed. I think he has good quickness, and he's able to create separation at the college level, but I don't think that's going to necessarily translate particularly well to the NFL level when he's going up against starting caliber cornerbacks, which is who he will wind up facing, you know, top three corners on opposing teams if he sees the field at any point. I think most of the times I watched him win, it was a lot of times when he was winning one-on-one, a lot of it was coming off going against safeties, which obviously beating college safeties is not the same thing as beating starting caliber NFL corners, is the point I'm trying to get to. And I think one of the issues I also had with Russell Gage as a wide receiver was he wasn't really asked in the games I saw. I watched maybe about 5 or 6 games. He wasn't asked really to run a diversity of routes. It was a lot of outs. Occasionally he would run a go route. Occasionally he would run a slant. Occasionally he would run a corner route, sort of sprinkled in there. But it was a lot of quick outs and intermediate out patterns. And, you know, his primary value in the LSU offense in reality was to be utilized on jet sweeps and on fake jet sweeps, where they would sort of motion him across the formation and sort of use him as a sort of, instead of using the traditional play action, use him as a, they would fake a jet sweep to him and use that to try to misdirect the defense and get, you know, freeze the linebackers rather than your sort of traditional read option or your traditional play action as their primary use of misdirection in their offense. And that, he was certainly effective in that role, but a lot of the times where I saw him really like break a long run on a jet sweep, it wasn't because he had like this amazing speed to beat SEC caliber defenders to the edge. It was a lot of times a safety or a linebacker was caught out of position and he was able to get to the edge and make a big gain out of it. Not necessarily because of something he did. Now, obviously, I sound pretty down on his abilities. It's just like as a player, he's not really, you know, as an offensive weapon, he's nothing special. There isn't anything of great value, I think, that he brings to the table in that regard. Not to say that he stinks or anything or he can't find some ways to contribute. It's just you don't look at anything he does as something that is unique to the point that it would sort of allow him in a fair or whatever competition to sort of rise to the top and emerge in that group to make you think, oh yeah, this guy is of a caliber that he's going to be able to stick long term on this team or in Atlanta for multiple years because there's some ability. Now, he needs to be developed. Obviously, he's still very raw. I think one of the more positive things I can say about his ability on offense and his skill set on offense is his blocking potential, not necessarily his blocking ability. He's a little undersized. He's not a small guy, but he's not necessarily a big guy at 6 feet, 186 pounds. He's more of the sort of the modern classic inside receiver, slot receiver, as opposed to the bigger outside receivers as we go further along, unless you have that elite speed on the outside like a Taylor Gabriel, like an Odell Beckham, et cetera, Antonio Brown. You know, generally speaking, receivers his size are going to play more in the slot. And I think he sort of projects a little bit better as a slot receiver in a lot of ways, just because he's not going to be facing press coverage, which was, I think, was relatively effective when he saw it at sort of jamming him. But going back to the blocking potential, there were times, like he gives effort. There were times where he would be very aggressive and very active and aggressive with his blocking. And you would see like, okay, if that can be refined and if you can get that sort of honed and refined a little bit, he could be a much better blocker in the NFL than he was in college. And it's certainly another thing of lack of experience playing quarterback. He's not blocking very often. And so that's something that could be developed. And in the same ways as a guy like Justin Hardy or Eric Weems, two players that were very underrated blockers at the wide receiver position, and arguably when they were on the team were the two best blocking receivers we had, which I know some people may disagree with, but most of those people don't watch film. I think you can sort of develop Russell Gage as a blocker in that regard. And so that's probably the one thing positive that I could really, really say about his offensive potential. I think a lot of what he does is reminiscent to me of Harry Douglas. I think he's like a poor man's Harry Douglas. And like comparably, like where I would compare him to is not Harry Douglas. And his playing style is very similar to Harry Douglas with the size, the speed, the quickness, and the questionable balance and whatnot. But I think in terms of a poor man's Harry Douglas, a good comp, a more accurate comp to where his potential is more like Darius Johnson. As you guys may recall, he was the undrafted guy that we had in 2013 that got opportunities when Julio and Roddy were injured early on in the season and sort of was the de facto number 3 wide receiver for that chunk of time when both those guys were out with Harry Douglas and Drew Davis ahead of him. And we saw flashes of Darius Johnson's playmaking ability and reliability, even though he was very inconsistent at times during that run of time. And I think that's really where Gage's ceiling is. And that, like, and I would say, like, that's where if you develop him over the next 2 or 3 years, like, I think in 2 or 3 years he could be Darius Johnson. Not necessarily that's the player he is right now. I think where Darius Johnson started at in 2013 is where you're hoping Gage is going to be at 2 or 3 years from now. So, you know, I'm not overly optimistic about his upside on offense. I think he can contribute on offense, but I don't think he's going to be anything special there as far as potential as a wide receiver. And we'll touch upon more about his ability on defense in a little bit further. But I do want to plug the Locked On NFL Draft podcast with hosts John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema. If you haven't been paying attention to that podcast since the draft, they've been doing redrafts 2014, 2015. They're now on the 2016. You know, maybe you want to check it out to see how high they think guys like Deion Jones and Keanu Neal would get drafted. And if they were redrafted, if that 2016 draft was redrafted today, possibly top 10 picks, maybe. If you guys check out the Locked On NFL Draft podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, definitely subscribe. Your team every day. Now, the interesting thing about Gage's ability as a cornerback, I don't have any particular specific insights into this because I didn't go back and watch any of what he did at LSU his first 2 years when he was a defensive back. From what I understand, he only really saw part-time action in 2 games in that span on defense, and the rest he just played on special teams. And so it wasn't really worth my time to go and dig through and try to find, you know, film or whatever, or cut-ups of 2 games where I have no idea how many snaps he even played. He might have played like 13 snaps total in those 2 games. And it just wasn't like even if he played well in those games, it wouldn't be enough for me to really draw a firm conclusion based off of, like, you know, what, 3 or 4 quarters of action at most or whatever. So I'm more judging his ability to play defense more sort of on paper than necessarily something I saw in film. But I think on paper, at least, you do like some of the things, like his lack, quote unquote, lack of size is less problematic as a cornerback because he would be a relatively big corner at his size. Something that we've mentioned before on the podcast is that he has 33-inch arms, which are on par with Isaiah Oliver as, I think, like 95th. Percentile. I think Oliver is like 33.5. So like he would have some of the longest arms you would see as a cornerback in the league. And it's very similar from a athletic and measurable standpoint to a guy like Mo Claiborne, who I mentioned at the top of the show, has sort of had a similar background as Russell Gage. And so I think if, you know, I'm not going to necessarily say, like, oh, he has the potential to be Mo Claiborne as a cornerback. Like, again, because I have no idea. I haven't seen him play. And I would imagine if he was that talented as a guy like Mo Claiborne was, who I think was a starter by his sophomore year at LSU, then he would have stuck as a defensive back rather than getting moved to the offense. So in reality, if I'm going to make a comparison to what I expect his ability as a defensive back to be, is more like an Akeem King, who similarly, I think, was a wide receiver primarily in high school, then went to San Jose State, got moved to cornerback, played briefly as a cornerback, struggled during his junior year. I broke that down in my scouting report. He got a lot of action in Fresno State against Devontae Adams, who torched them in that game. Then they sort of moved him to safety the following year. He started, was a decent sort of box safety that specialized in covering tight ends over the middle, and was really not that much of a draftable prospect as a safety. But because he tested really well and because Dan Quinn and that coaching staff had success taking athletes and molding them into cornerbacks in Seattle, they tried to do that with Akeem King here in Atlanta. We saw flashes of Akeem King do some positive things, but not really put it all together, certainly not in any time frame that really prevented the Falcons from going out and getting better cornerbacks in other drafts, like a Brian Poole, like a Jalen Collins. Who else did we add in 2016? Whoever else we added that I'm blanking on. Goodwin, Deji Olatoya, etc. And so King got lost in the shuffle a little bit. So I think in terms of Gage's projection as a cornerback, that's more in line what I think is a more realistic expectation, a fairly raw guy that has athletic tools that you would want in a cornerback, in a DB, but probably is going to be a shade behind other potential options there. And so I think all of that is to say that what we're really talking about with Russell Gage, or at least what I'm thinking about with Russell Gage, is his ability to stick in Atlanta is going to be not exclusively, but primarily tied to his ability as a special teams performer rather than what he's going to contribute on offense or defense. And I think when we talk about Gage's ability to stick and his ability to be developed, I think even if you're like, let's go back to the wide, we'll give a concrete example with the wide receiver. Let's say, and this also applies to defensive back, but let's say you believe that 1 year's worth of development in the NFL is equal to worth 2 years of development in college, which is, I don't think I would agree with that, but let's say for the sake of argument, that's true. If at the end of this year you develop Gage either as a DB or a wide receiver, like his 1 year in the NFL would be the equivalent of him starting as, you know, if he was a DB, it would be starting his sophomore year, and then he would be at the end of this year be on par with other rookies. And the same thing with wide receiver, because he got 2 years of development there. So like you would be able to finish his collegiate development after his first year. But what that means is any rookies that you bring in next year that have spent 4 years or whatever as wide receivers or defensive backs, or any guys that you bring in this year and carry on the practice squad, well, essentially he'll be a year behind those guys because he's going to be quote unquote at his finishing his senior year at the end of this season. So he's always going to be to a certain extent a year behind in that development in comparison to other guys. And so I think that's one of the reasons why I'm not overly optimistic that even if Gage does stick around for a number of years, that you're necessarily going to be looking at him as a true developmental piece. Like if he does develop, whether it's as a wide receiver, whether it is as a defensive back, that's obviously going to be beneficial to the team. But I don't think he's ever going to be looked upon by this team as, oh, we're counting on Russell Gage to fill this spot as the fourth receiver. We're counting on Russell Gage to fill this spot as the fourth corner or the third corner. I think he can eventually be developed into that fourth option, which is the guy that barely plays but can play if there is an injury to one of your top guys. But I think in terms of him, like we saw 2 years ago with Akeem King, once Jalen Collins got suspended, everybody was sort of talking about Akeem King, like, oh, this is Akeem King's chance to step up and be a nickel. And I remember at that time, I was like, yeah, I think if you guys are really evaluating Akeem King coming out of San Jose State, you would not be overly optimistic about his chances of being that option. And I think that was a big reason why a guy like Brian Poole was afforded the opportunity to really excel. And we've seen him do that since then. And I think that's kind of the same situation with Russell Gage, where it's like he may be in a position where he could take that opportunity, but similarly to an Akeem King, I'm not expecting him to sort of snatch those opportunities should they come down the road. So I think if you're looking at his upside as a DB, I think the player that I would probably compare him to, besides Akeem King, in terms of what his ceiling is going to be, is a guy like Justin Bethel. If he does develop as a defensive back, I think the best case scenario is a player like Justin Bethel, who had the quote unquote talent and tools that Arizona tried over and over to develop him, but whenever he got opportunities on the field, he left a lot to be desired on the field, and soon thereafter would often be benched. And so as Bethel showed, like if he's one of your top two or three corners, you're going to feel a little bit lacking in that regard as a team in terms of your evaluation of him. But if he's the fourth option because he has that experience, if in a pinch, can you plug him into the lineup? Absolutely. Is he the guy that you want to plug into the lineup? Not really. And I think that's sort of where I see potentially if you factor out where Russell Gage could be 3-4 years from now, where his potential as a defensive back is. So obviously I'm not overly optimistic about his potential as a offensive or defensive player, but I do like his ability as a special teams player, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But first, I want to let you guys know about LockedOnSports.com, the one-stop hub of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find content dealing with the NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball. Again, that's LockedOnSports.com, your team every day. So with Gage's ability on special teams, I do think his ability on special teams has the potential to be very valuable. And I think, you know, he projects well. I don't have necessarily, even though I may be considered the special teams guy by many people, at least among Falcons Twitter, I don't necessarily know what exactly translates to the NFL. The last two times I saw a player that the Falcons drafted, I was like, hey, that guy at the very least should be a really good special teams player. Didn't really develop into a good special teams player. And those two were Des Southwood and Kamal Ishmael. Like, Ishmael's fine. Southwood was okay in his brief time here in Atlanta. But neither one of those guys were, like, great special teams players. It's like Ishmael's good enough to get the job done. And when you have a bunch of green, bad special teams players like the Falcons had in 2017, Ishmael looks a lot better by comparison. But back in the days when the Falcons had really good special teams units, Ishmael wasn't even in the top five or six guys on that unit. So I say that with a caveat, like, I don't necessarily know what exactly, you know, how to project special teams performers in the league. Obviously, I'm assuming that the coaching staff has a much better handle on that, Keith Armstrong in particular. So I will give them a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt when it comes to this evaluation and think that they see something that they really like in particular, because they haven't really drafted anybody that you would assume with the mindset of that guy purely is a special teams guy, other than maybe Akeem King. So we'll see how that develops. But I think in terms of trying to project him on special teams at the next level, it's a little bit difficult for me. And this is part of the reasons why I don't have as firm a grip on this, is because special teams in the college level is a lot different than what it is at the NFL level, particularly when it comes to punts, which is where Gage really shined to me as a gunner on punts. But, you know, I think you do wonder about that, because in college, like, you're not facing double teams when you're trying to be that gunner. And for those of you that don't know, the gunner is the guy that lines up outside on punt coverage teams, basically lines up as a wide receiver. If you could basically structure a punt coverage team as the punter is the quarterback that's in shotgun, but much deeper in shotgun. You have an offensive line with a long snapper. You have a pair of tight ends, quote unquote. Then you have a running back, quote unquote, who is the up back slash the personal protectors, whose job is to block anybody that gets past the offensive line and tight ends. And then you have two wide receivers flanking them out, and those are the gunners. And the gunners' jobs basically are threefold. First, if you're on your side of the field, you know, in your own territory, and you punt the ball, basically their job is to get downfield quickly enough that it forces the other team to call a fair catch, so that you can limit the return and get the most positive, the maximum kicking distance that the punter gives, 45, 50 yards, or whatever the case may be. If you're on the opposing side of the ball, where the punt's going to be considerably shorter, their job is to get down the field as quickly as possible and potentially down the ball inside the 5, inside the 10, to give you positive field position. And then obviously, the third thing they're supposed to do is get down the field in the event of a return and make the tackle. However, the thing about gunners is, and punt returns in the NFL, is punt returners are trained to make the first guy miss, and the guy that they're most often going to make miss, particularly if they're competent returners, is going to be the gunner, because he's going to be the first of the coverage team down the field. So it's one of the reasons why gunners don't make a ton of tackles. If you do see a gunner that does make a bunch of tackles, that's usually a strong indicator of how good a gunner he is, or maybe it also is an indicator that his punter is not particularly good. But it is one of those things where it's like, you see Gage, and the thing about Gage is, when you watch him in college at LSU covering punts, he does all three of those things really well. And so those do translate to the level. But here's where the question marks come in, is in the college level, you don't see double teams. And in the NFL, you're going to see double teams almost all the time. Like, I watched about 25 punts of LSU's punter this past year against SEC competition. And I think only on one of them that I remember was that he was facing a double team, whereas the two guys on the return team that are basically trying to prevent the gunner from getting downfield to force the fair catch, to down the ball, or to make the tackle. And you only saw that one time in the Alabama game. And he did a good job beating that double team. But, like, in the NFL, you're going to face double teams 75, 85, 95% of the time. And generally speaking, you're only going to see a one-on-one on the outside for a gunner is if the return team's trying to block the kick. While one instance of him being able to beat double team is a positive thing, I don't know if it necessarily projects to him being able to do that at the level that he needs to be a high-level gunner at the NFL level. So that's where I have a few questions with his special teams ability. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he did it that one time. Presumably, he could do it much more often, and there's no reason to think that he won't be able to do it. But if he can't do it, then it's going to be a lot more problematic because basically, if you're an NFL gunner and you're facing a single team, if you can't beat that one guy, then you're pretty bad as a gunner. And, you know, that's part of the reason why the coverage units weren't so good in the playoffs, because guys like Nick Williams, among others, weren't really good at doing that. So I think as far as his kickoff coverage goes, I think he was solid in that. He didn't really jump off the screen for the handful of kicks that weren't touchbacks that I saw him covering. He did make some tackles. But you guys, longtime listeners, know I sort of have a hate relationship with kickoffs. I just don't think in today's NFL they're that important. And so whether if you're a good kickoff cover guy, like whoop-de-doo, like awesome, but like how big a deal is that? I don't know how the new rules will affect returns. There are reasons to think that they may benefit returns. There's reasons to think they may limit returns. Obviously, the league has mandated publicly that their goal is to limit returns. So my assumption is that they instituted the new rules with the hope and expectation that it would also limit returns as it has in the last couple of years. So even if Gage was a great kickoff cover guy, I don't think it would matter all that much in terms of his ability to project to the next level. So that's a kind of a question mark, but I'm not really concerned about that. I'm not necessarily looking at him and being like, oh, that guy's going to be amazing on kickoff coverage. One of the things I did notice a couple of times was he was a little bit prone to get out of his lane, which I imagine in the college level you can kind of get away with because the quality of player is much less. You can't do that in the NFL. If you do that in the NFL, the quality of returners, you know, at least when you face the Cordero Pattersons and the Farrell Coopers of the world, and as we saw in that Seahawk game, if one lane is not filled, Tyler Lockett's going to take that 45 yards, and you're going to be basically a Matt Bosher tackle away from giving up a touchdown. So that's something that obviously can be coached and tweaked on with Gage as far as his kickoff cover abilities go. So I think ultimately at the end, his ability as a gunner is going to sort of make or break his potential in Atlanta. And I think looking back, I've been paying close attention to the Falcons special teams probably since like 2010 or so. And I would say there's probably been about four or five good gunners in that span. I would probably rank them 3, 4, and 5 are sort of bunched together. So let's go with Justin Hardy at 3, CJ Goodwin 4, Drew Davis 5. I would probably put Chris Owens at 2. And Antoine Smith is a clear number one, the greatest of all time, as I say. I think at the very least, Gage should have no problem being at the same level as guys like Hardy and Goodwin, who have been our gunners for primarily the last couple of years. Whether he gets to the Antoine Smith level, I think remains to be seen. And one of the big reasons why I think Antoine Smith was such an effective gunner was just because of how fast he was with that 4.3 speed. Once he was able to beat that double team initially, there was just no way guys were going to catch him. And so he was able to get downfield and do all the things that great gunners were supposed to do. And Gage obviously doesn't have 4.3 speed. He has 4.5 speed. So I'm a little bit skeptical to be like, oh, he'll be just as good as Antoine Smith because he doesn't have the speed. But then again, you don't necessarily need to have 4.3 speed to be a good gunner, as guys like Justin Bethel and Matthew Slater can certainly attest to. So it's not like it's a limit on his ability. I'm just not necessarily going to be like, you know, like a Antoine Smith, like an Eric Weems, who I think have been the two best cover guys that we've had on special teams over the last, you know, 7, 8 years. That's two of the best out of like 60 plus players, which puts those two guys, Weems and Smith, in sort of like the 96th percentile, if you want to consider that. Do I think Russell Gage will get to that sort of 96th percentile level where it'll be like, oh, you know, 5 years from now, I'll be like, man, over the last 15 plus years, there's been three great special teams cover guys, and Russell Gage is going to be one of those guys. Could he get there? Absolutely. Will he get there? As you guys, longtime listeners, know, I tend to be a little bit more practical, as they say. And if you say, you know, there's a guy would have to be in the 96th percentile, I'll generally bet against someone being 96th percentile. But I do think Gage could be one of the better special teams players on this team. I think that's a big reason why the Falcons drafted him or are counting on him to be that sort of player for them, assuming that, you know, Justin Bethel plays 1 year here in Atlanta and then moves on elsewhere. And sort of he's going to be, you know, Gage. I think a big what they really want Gage to do for this team is to be their sort of special teams captain that they missed with Eric Weems this past year. And I think Gage can get there. Will he is the question, but, you know, I think there's reason to be optimistic there, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's a slam dunk guarantee, because who knows really at this point, unless you have, you know, made a living evaluating special teams players, which I know none of you listening have done that. And very few people in the world have done that. So I think Gage has, you know, I think Weems is an interesting example, because I think the type of player, when we look at the type of wide receiver that I think Gage can be, I think when you go back and you look at how the Falcons used Weems back in the day when he was their fifth wide receiver, and occasionally we get reps on offense, you know, with screens and sort of jet sweeps and that type of stuff that the Falcons, I don't think they used jet sweeps back then, but similar types of plays where it was just like, throw it short, let Weems get the ball in his hand and let him go to work. I think that's really sort of what Gage's potential on offense is going to be. So again, that's a player that can contribute on offense, but that's not necessarily a guy that you could be like, yeah, that's a guy that we really want to be our, you know, number three wide receiver or our number four wide receiver. So I think Gage has upside to be good. We'll sort of see where he is. One last thing I should mention before we get out of here is talking about his return abilities. I think, as I've said, I think on a previous episode, I do think he has a skill set to be a returner. I don't think he's amazing with the ball in his hands just because he doesn't have great balance or great acceleration. But I do think he has a skill set that, you know, in a pinch that you could put him as a returner and he could be functional there. I think, you know, particularly for the Falcons, if, you know, we get to a point where he's, you know, our gunner, and they're looking for other ways to get him more involved so that he isn't just basically living and dying by his ability to be a great gunner. They could put him as a return specialist, assuming that he, you know, shows that he can hold on to the football competently, and sort of use him there as a functional piece, just because it allows them to not use maybe a more valuable offensive or defensive player like Isaiah Oliver there instead, or Edo Smith or whatever the case may be. And so I think in that way, Gage could be that. But in terms of like him being a good returner, like I'm also skeptical of that, just because, you know, I don't think he's like an amazing player with the ball in his hands. And I think there are other options there. You know, basically I would say like, he's probably like your fifth or sixth best option among the guys currently on the roster as far as their return skills go. So I think if injuries or other reasons, as I mentioned earlier, sort of force the Falcons to, you know, spurn their first four or so options at that spot, then, yeah, I think you could put Gage out there and he could be fine. But I don't think you're going to be expecting more than sort of replacement level value, as they might say, at that position. So I think Gage can be a very valuable special teams player, certainly if he is as valuable a cover guy as I think the Falcons hope and certainly Mike Mayock thinks he's going to be, then, you know, he's going to be one of my favorite players, even though he may or may not be a big-time contributor on offense or defense. And so I think he's got a good future ahead of him. The expectation for me is that he will win one of those gunner spots. I think if he does not win one of the gunner spots right away in training camp this summer, that's going to be very problematic for his ability to stick in Atlanta. So I think the Falcons will give him every opportunity to win that spot opposite Justin Bethel. I think there will be other candidates in the mix, but I think it will be strongly favored and slanted in Russell Gage's ability, not to say that he won't necessarily deserve it, but I do think it. I would be surprised at this point in time if he's not the gunner opposite Justin Bethel, assuming injuries aren't an issue. So yeah, I think we'll see him be the gunner. We'll see him be on the coverage units. I don't really expect a whole lot from him offensively or defensively. So I think, you know, bright future ahead of him. We'll see where he is at the end of these next 4 years when he gets up to his rookie contract, if he's the type of valuable special teams player that deserves a second contract, and like a Matt Slater, like a Justin Bethel did. But if not, then, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, I guess. So that's a conversation to be had in 4 years. So, yeah, that's it, guys, on my Russell Gage scouting report. Good special teams player. Meh. as far as a wide receiver cornerback goes, maybe I'm underselling him a little bit. Maybe I'd probably be a little bit more optimistic about his ability as a defensive back, but I think a lot of that is because I haven't seen him as a defensive back, and so there's a little bit more room for me to be a little bit more hopeful and a little bit more optimistic about his chances there, just because I haven't sat there and watched like 6 or 7 games of him on offense and been like, oh, okay, meh, you know. So there's a little bit more optimism there, but not a whole lot, just because if he was such a good defensive back, why did he switch positions midway through his college career? Maybe there's more to that story than I realize, but that's my assumption at this point. So Russell Gage down. We got one more to do with Foye Olukun. If you guys want to provide your feedback, tomorrow's episode will be a Q&A. So if you haven't already submitted your questions, make sure you do that right now. Stop the car if you're listening to me on the radio or on your phone in the car on your morning commute. Send in your questions on Twitter or Facebook, so that, because I will be recording that Q&A probably Thursday evening to be posted on Friday. So you're listening to this on Thursday morning, presumably, then you still have a little bit of time, but you know, time is fleeting. Time is a flat circle. So where can you submit your questions? That is at Twitter at FalcFans. That's my Twitter handle. If it's podcast related, just let me know. If it is podcast related, just go ahead and send in Locked On Falcons. That's the easiest way to get those Q&A questions in. Facebook, Locked On Falcons is the Facebook page. LockedOnFalcons@mail.com is the email address. And of course, you can post a comment at LockedOnFalcons.com and FalcFans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. And until then, guys, we'll do a Q&A on Friday. We'll get a Foye Olukun scouting report at some point next week. And I don't know what else I promised on a recent episode that's nearly on the docket, but those are two things to look forward to, and we'll figure out the rest of it after that.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.